Marsha McLuhan was born in Edmonton, Alberta in 1911. A few years later, 1914, World War I started, and his family moved to Nova Scotia because his mother had come from Nova Scotia in Canada and on the East Coast, and they were there for a few years, and then they moved back to Winnipeg in 1915. So he grew up basically in Winnipeg, Manitoba, which is the prairie area of Canada. Now, what happened is that he didn't do well. He was a normal, every student, but I think he flunked grade 6, or he was about to flunk, but his mother, who was a very powerful personality, went in and said, no, it's a bad teacher, not his fault. So I think he avoided to get that on his record. So he was not an outstanding student, nothing stood out, but he was sparked at one point by one of his teachers in the later years. So he went to the University of Manitoba. I think it was that university. It's two universities in Winnipeg. So he went to the University of Manitoba. Let's see, 18, 19, 30, 31, something like that. And he got his BA and his MA. He then went to Cambridge in England and got another BA and MA from 1934 to 1940. And then he worked on his PhD and got that in 1943. He got his PhD. In English. So he came to Madison, Wisconsin and started teaching there in this fall of 1936. He spent a year there, and then since he converted that year to Catholicism, he grew up as a Baptist or Protestant thing, though he was interested in Rosicrucianism and some of those areas through his father. He gets to Manitoba, Wisconsin, does that for a year, converts to Catholicism, so moves the next year to a university in St. Louis. Maybe the University of St. Louis. And he's there from 37 to 44. He wants to avoid, he's becoming eligible in this period of World War II in the United States to be drafted. So he wants to avoid the draft, so he moves back to Canada and he gets a job at the University of Toronto, the Catholic division, St. Michael's University. St. Michael's College on the University of Toronto in Toronto in 1946. Oh, wait, 1944 to 90, he moves out of the United States after having met the most important person in some level in his life, Wyndham Lewis, in the summer of 43, who had come from Britain and came back to Canada during the war, but his hotel got burnt down, so he moves, and McLuhan meets him because his mother knew of Wyndham Lewis, so McLuhan puts up Wyndham Lewis in St. Louis from 43 to 44, 45, gets him painting commissions because he was a great artist. And then they were going to do a journal together, but Lewis goes back to England in 1945 because the war is over and his wife missed England. Marsh McLuhan moves to University of Windsor, which was originally Assumption University in 1944, teaches there for 2 years, and in 1946 moves to St. Michael's College on University of Toronto campus. And St. Louis and Assumption and St. Michael's College are all Catholic. Now, that's the details. Now, if you read some of his criticism, he says in 1945, 46, he talks about the effect of the atomic bomb. In the summer of 1945, he's on to the social effects of the atomic bomb and how it will be a threat to those with big egos, especially artists. So he said the artist had to infiltrate decent society. And he wrote, decent society in quotes. That meant you get in there, you become a teacher in the university, you get a PhD. That's how you be an artist if you want to have some kind of influence. At least that's what he imagined. Well, he noticed that nobody was discussing advertising from a critical aesthetic point of view. He started doing that in his classes, showing slides to the kids what they were involved in, the pop culture magazines and radio and tunes that he knew they were interested in, because he couldn't get them interested in any of the book stuff or Shakespeare, so he did this reverse psychology or reverse sociology and took their culture and got them talking about it. And it became striking how well he did it, so he was commissioned to do a book in 1946 for Vanguard Press around this analyzing ads with multidisciplinary approaches to it, not for ads as a hypnosis on people or people becoming too much of consumption zombies. That was a subset, but he was looking at it as a political force on all other subtle levels because he'd been studying James Joyce, Wyndham Lewis, T.S. Eliot, Ezra Pound, W.B. Yeats, and a few others, mainly around this group and Wyndham Lewis's group, the Vorticists. They were looking at the new technologies, new forms of communication. He built on that stuff. He's probably the only person in North America who had this unique view of advertising and how the artists of the day were dealing with it. And so Vanguard Press said that they would publish a book, and then you can read in McLuhan's letters for 6 years, so 5 years, 46 to 51, Vanguard Press gets more and more nervous about this book that's critiquing advertising. And the reason McLuhan could get away with it is because there was no copyright on ads. You could put them in the book. But later it was found out that a circular was made within the advertising industry, very nervous about the fact that this professor was going to aesthetically look at ads. They did not want any attention on the advertising, not from a conspiratorial or Vance Packard level. It was a more subtle, probably incomprehensible level for most average readers at that point. So he was very frustrated with that book, Mechanical Bride, as it was being done. You can see in his letters. And when the book came out in 1951, he said, the book's useless. It's obsolete. And so it didn't sell. He saved the remaindered copies. But he had gotten, meanwhile, into a larger view of communications thanks to understanding Finnegan's Wake a bit better and having met Wyndham Lewis. Wyndham Lewis taught him how to look at it in a new, subtle way. Because Wyndham Lewis wrote a book in 1926, The Art of Being Ruled. And McLuhan said this book was the key to how corporate management would run society, as much as the princes 400 years later were influenced by Machiavelli's book, The Prince. This was as important for a new time as Machiavelli was for the time when the printing press came in. So here you have McLuhan with the help of Wyndham Lewis, and then a colleague of the University of Toronto broke into the field of communication studies. His name was Harold Innes. McLuhan constantly took that well-respected professor and used his stuff as an academic cover and produced a book in 1962 called The Gutenberg Galaxy about the effect of the printing press on society and what was going to happen with the electric technologies. And I'll end at that point. He then went from there into a whole new realm, and within it predicted the ideas that Ion tells us, or acted them out, or referred them. Ion says he did not complete the whole process that Ion represents. That was left up to me, Carolyn, and JW. We completed it, but we stand on the shoulders of people like McLuhan, and that's how you begin to look at them. It's like the best kind of art criticism and sociological criticism and occult criticism and inspirational you-make-your-own-universe, relax-and-allow philosophy or writings you'll ever get. I rest my case. No more need to be said about McLuhan. That is the facts.